This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. We take a look at how U.S. markets closed overnight. The Dow was up 0.7%, but the S&P 500 and NASDAQ were both down. S&P 500 marginally down by about 0.1%, while NASDAQ was down 1.2%. So for some analysis on what's moving markets, we have on the line Song Seng-Woon, economist with CIMB Private Banking. Seng-Woon, good morning. Good as always to have you. Now, swaps are indicating a 50 basis point hike for the next two FOMC meetings with a neutral rate of 2.25% by year end. Do you agree with this?
Well, since the U.S. central bank has been very late, I suppose there should be more upside. But at this point, I suppose taking all things into consideration, still very robust U.S. economy and economic and the labor market condition and price pressure, I think it is a decent starting point, at least for the next couple of meetings.
And China's first quarter GDP growth came in at 4.8%. Was this in line with your expectations? And looking at Q2's numbers, which economic sectors would be most impacted as a result of lockdown?
I suppose from China's side, the macro headline numbers for Q1 came in much better. I think this was really because of the momentum in the earliest part of the year, January, February, because towards the later part of March, certainly as we head into Q2, it looks like, and certainly the data from the March period shows somewhat mixed with the lockdown in Shanghai, which is just beginning to be lifted in selected area. It looks like the momentum has eased somewhat. And I think Q2, there'll be pressure. Obviously, much will depend to what extent the restriction will be eased in Shanghai, to what extent goods start to move from the key ports, because ships had the number of ships waiting to load and unload had doubled up in Shanghai port, which is the world's busiest port. So this is where the pressure lies. That headline numbers was good, which is why when the number came out, I think market basically overlooked the better than expected numbers, the focus on the faltering growth momentum and on what the central bank and the government would be looking to provide support and cushion the economy. Their challenge lies in the fact that while the economy is slowing, they also have taken pains to slow down and deleverage the overheated property market. So they do not want at this point to be seen sort of adding fuel to the property sector, which we have seen being deleveraged now. So that's the balance that we're seeing and the challenge facing Chinese policymakers at this point.
Do you think that China will be able to achieve its official growth target of 5.5% for 2022 then? I mean, I already see Nomura cutting their growth forecast to 3.9% on the economic outlook and disruptions due to the country's COVID zero strategy.
Indeed. So, well, the good thing is we still have some leeway to go, or runway, as we love to say, for this year. So Q1 came in better. Q2 probably came in lower. So much will really depend to what extent COVID situation, global demand, situation in Eastern Europe pans out. So there's still room for policy support to lift demand more significantly in the second half. I mean, for larger economy, we have certainly seen, we were talking about the U.S. The U.S. is looking to see how it can tighten further because inflation expectation, the reverse is in China, where there is policy easing to try to support the economy and economic recovery. So it really depends on that. But certainly, the about 5% growth target for this year is certainly put to the test, I suppose, for policymakers. They can still squeak in if the second half, especially towards the year end, see a significant rebound in economic activities as restrictions are eased.
And speaking of inflation, Seng-Woon, the IMF is projecting higher inflation in emerging countries versus those in developed ones. So among which ASEAN countries do you think the impact of rising price pressures will be most keenly felt?
I think it's everywhere. The challenge for government in Asia is to what extent and how far they go to cushion on the impact through subsidies, through price support. And certainly we have seen that in many of the ASEAN countries, whether it's in Malaysia or Indonesia, or even in Thailand as well, which has taken some of the heat off headline inflation or food inflation. and fuel costs as well. But certainly, they are also on the way up, but not quite as, I suppose, significant as in developed economies where labor market conditions is far more tighter. Demand from easing in restriction, pickup in in-person activities has also boosted demand and put more pressure on prices, multi-year or multi-decade highs in European countries or in U.S. I think, what was it? I think German producer prices rose to a four-decade high, I think, in March. But, so all these other things, and we have seen higher costs being passed on to consumer, less so in Asia or in selected or in more emerging Asian countries. But we are all still facing the same challenge, but different pressures, because I think government has been able to step in and provide a little bit of relief at the margin. To what extent they can continue to do so remains, I suppose, the question. But there is still some flexibility on monetary policy because of, I suppose, government intervention to ensure prices remains somewhat more contained.
And speaking of the IMF, Sri Lanka has requested a bailout from them. Is their debt crisis largely contained, or is there a potential contagion effect on other countries, especially in the South Asian region?
Much less so. I mean, we don't have as much of a trade or trade through and with Sri Lanka is relatively small, direct or indirect investment as well. I mean, Sri Lanka, you know, it's one of those emerging economies where I suppose, if not for economic management, should be able to enjoy a stronger prosperity, but that's a different issue. We certainly will see, because it's a small economy, much will really depend on two things: political landscape, how soon can that be stabilized, and to what extent then that allow creditors or countries from around the region to at least provide some lifeline, to provide some support. It's more or less more on humanitarian ground that I think people are providing sort of support to stabilize the still quite uneven political landscape at this point.
Sing-Woon, I want to shift the conversation to Japan. I think all eyes are, of course, on the dollar-yen cross at the moment. It's, you know, it's probably one of the lowest that we've seen in quite a long time. Do you think the yen sell-off has been overdone, or is there more to come? And what's the reason for this, actually?
I suppose basically it's coming back to what we were talking about, to what extent how late the U.S. has been in pushing rates up, and to what extent we see rates, interest rate going up. And that obviously contrasts significantly with the Bank of Japan, which is still a very dovish view of how it will want to and continue to maintain its ultra-dovish monetary policy. And hence, your interest rate differential widens, and depending on how aggressive the U.S. is, hence the pressure on the Japanese yen. If it is more advantageous to be holding U.S. dollar asset because yielding more, you switch to the dollar side and you suddenly be selling out from the yen. And that's what we're suddenly being seen on the yen side. Mm. The flip side for that side is it's good for exporters who are selling in yen. The only challenge for now is the input cost, because everything has gone up, whether it's a can of tomato sauce or a packet of packed noodles, has cost more. So that's the challenge over there. So this is where I suppose the pressure has been, and which is why we have seen the yen drop to, again, multi-decade, 20-year low.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are talking about, you know, how much pressure, downward pressure there will be. So I think this is where the central bank is facing the headache. To what extent, because of their divergent monetary policy, they're seeing it reflected in the yen. So there is economic fundamentals behind a significantly weaker yen, although it did recover a little bit yesterday. Yeah. I haven't seen it today yet. But
currently 128. Currently 128. But Sing-Woon, I've got a question for you, and correct me if I'm wrong, because historically, when the yen is at all-time low, the equity markets, the Japanese equity market, does well. Is this going to be the case this time?
Indeed. Well, it always has done well. If you look at the Nikkei, for instance, in that it has rebounded a little bit over the last couple of weeks. I mean, I think
It's only down 4.65% on a year-to-date basis.
It's up like 1.5%. Yeah, it's up like 1.5% in the last week or so. So certainly for the exporters, it has done well. I suppose the key thing for the country is to what extent we see imported inflation, to what extent we see a little bit of inflation lifting demand. Not quite there yet. So yeah, it's kind of there's positive and yet there are negative from a weaker yen for the economy.
Okay. All right, Seng Woon, thanks very much for speaking to us. That was Song Seng Woon, economist with CIMB Private Banking, giving us his take on some of the trends that are expected to move markets in the days and weeks ahead. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.